Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
This is America for anybody that hasn't come to recognize my voice yet. And I have my lovely friend here.
Teresa. To this topic today that we're talking about, I don't feel like I belong anywhere. Did you say that yet?
No.
Oh.
We got stuck in the intro piece. So yeah, we're going to be talking about not feeling like you belong anywhere.
The first thing I thought about, like, well, I don't feel like I belong anywhere, is like around my brain and my brain telling me things. And it's like, it's true that one of the things that's a real hard thing to figure out is like, is it true that I don't belong anywhere? Or is that like my depressed and my anxious brain telling me that I shouldn't belong anywhere, or I don't belong anywhere? Or like how you feel all alone, even though people are around you all the time?
I believe it has to be a combination of the two things, because sometimes a person can feel like they just don't belong because you feel like people don't understand you, which could be tied to all these feelings that I have about my depression or my anxiety or whatever X label you want to use there.
Yeah.
So it kind of works in tandem, right? Because you're just like, which one is it? I think the core is the idea that you feel like you can't connect with anybody.
It's true that when I'm depressed, I can't literally connect with people.
Yeah.
Except my bed. It's weird. Like in the deepest of depressions, yes, feeling connection is very hard. When I say depression, it's not just depression, because I think the research is understanding that the ability to feel emotions, which I think is important to feel connected to other people, is actually robbed from us with multiple illnesses, depression, some anxiety, certainly psychosis.
This is the issue though, right? If I cannot emotionally connect with somebody for whatever reason, whether that's because I'm living with depression and I'm having like a major depressive episode and I just don't have the energy to connect with people, because it does take energy, right? It takes work to do that.
Yeah.
Or on the other side of that, it's I may not know how. Like if you take away the depression and it's just me kind of functioning on a daily, how do you connect with people? How do you talk to people?
Yeah. So there's a part where you have to learn how, like learn some skills and how to connect, which takes time. Making friends is a whole thing that we could talk about. And also like not talking to yourself down when you're in the moment of trying to be friends, or finding people who are just as, who appreciate or like understand you. But I guess I was talking first about something that was more like, more primal than that. It's not even like the skills that I need to, but in the moments where I think that other people have talked about this, but it's funny because even as a therapist, when I've talked to a lot of people, this is maybe not something we talk to people enough about, which is like what happens when your illness actually robs you of the ability. It's like, I have the capacity to make friends, but when I'm in a moment where I'm either consumed by my thoughts or the depression makes me feel apathetic, like I don't feel like I can feel feelings. Like in that moment, I don't think that I could even go back to the skills that I have. Like definitely the case that in my relationships, like even the people closest to me, they're like, you're just not connected, which also makes me not call people. It's like, I couldn't even say that I cared. Like, does that make sense?
It does make sense, but connect me back to this idea of at the primal kind of essence of what you're saying. When you're talking about specifically when you're in an episode of X and you do have the skills, but you're not able to utilize those skills because the illness is taking that away from you.
Yeah. Like there's one part of, I think, a mental illness where people don't feel like they belong.
Yeah.
That's like, I literally actually don't feel like I belong on this earth. We hear that a lot from people. I don't feel like I belong here on this earth. I don't feel like I exist, or I don't feel like I feel. Like I can't even feel, right? So I don't feel like I belong. Like sometimes I'll be in my family in moments where I know intellectually in my mind, like this is where I belong, but I'm like, I just can't even feel the emotions that someone should feel like they matter. And it's not my thoughts. It's not like I'm thinking negative thoughts, because I've experienced both sides where I'm like, yes, this is about my thoughts. And my thoughts are telling me that you're stupid and you're dumb and nobody cares about you, nobody loves you. But there's also this other side I don't think we talk a lot about, which is like, when I can't feel feelings, I just don't feel like I can connect to people. Like, I don't feel like I belong where I belong, but literally because I just don't feel like I feel feelings.
When I hear what you're saying, I feel like you're just saying this overwhelming kind of numbness to things.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, yes, like it feels numb. It feels numb. There are certainly clinical terms. Some people say apathy. Mm-hmm. Some people say anhedonia. There are terms for like feeling like you lose feelings, emotional feelings. But I think what's interesting for me here is like, when we think about not feeling like we belong, I don't think that people talk about that aspect of the, how the numbness isolates you. Because it's a weird spot where you're like, oh, I'm isolated, but I'm numb. There's a part of you where you move in and out of how much I care that I don't belong. But also how distressing that experience feels.
Yeah, because it's a cycle. Like you're in it that so much so that you can't even think about how I feel, because it kind of circles back to this idea, well, I really don't care, but then I do care, but I really don't.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out how to break that, which brings me to this idea of, if you're in that space, what takes you out of it? What helps you recognize, this is where I'm at?
When I feel numb, I know now, looking back, that feeling is tied to an onset of a depressed episode, you know, which is a solvable thing. It was like, okay, I did my work. I know that this is how I feel when I feel depressed. So what I need to do, I need to check my meds. I got to check my food habits. I got to do the things that I know I need to do to get myself out of a depressed episode. Also knowing that I know it ends helps a lot. Like, I know this ends helps a lot, because I think the first time I felt it, it's scary. And you're like, oh my gosh, what is this? And you don't know that there's a solution to it. But that was easier than not having friends, which is the next part of the conversation, I think. So, like, yeah, it's part of the biology, I think, you know, like the numbness of the feelings, I think, is part of the, at least for me, that's the way I see it. Maybe other people are different.
For most of us, we don't understand the biology of it. It's just the isolating factor of it, that is just saying, everywhere I look, I cannot connect with someone. And you yearn for connection, but you don't know how to break out of it to be like, we're adults. Yeah, we're adults, in quotes. And it's hard to make friends as adults, you know, but you end up finding opportunities to connect with people and maybe become friends through shared activities. But when you're younger, and you're like in high school or even before that, you know, the way things are here in the United States specifically, you know, because when you look at education in other places, it's a little different. You know, you could be in a classroom with people you've never met before, and it takes some skill to be able to find people that you can connect with, because in that environment, you feel, because of adolescence, because of all the things that are happening with your mind, your body, your personality, that you're just like, yeah, these people don't understand me at all.
I like that you're honing us in onto this one issue, which is like, whether because of our past or our trust issues, or because we don't feel comfortable, we're talking bad to ourselves, we just don't feel like we belong. We feel weird, mm-hmm. which is true. We're weird at times. And we all know that everybody is weird in their own weird way, but we're all trying to find our community of weird.
Right. We're all special. See, you say weird, I say special. You know, when I was young, I remember this idea of people telling me, you're weird because I like things that like my peers didn't like. And I was like, okay, great. I'm weird then. I'll accept it.
You did? You were able to do that? Just be like, oh, I'm weird?
Yeah.
How did you do that? You see, you were born with some... See, that's amazing.
I don't know. I don't know if it was like a protective thing that I did. I was just like, all right, then I'm weird, man. And I owned it. And I was believing in myself.
I know that that's how people should be. But that experience is so foreign to me. I hear what you're saying as like yeah. something from another planet.
So what was, if somebody were to say that you were weird when you were younger, what was your reaction to that?
Oh, crushing devastation. It was another iteration of just my not belongingness. Yeah, I just took all that stuff and I ate it like a piece of cake. Like I just yeah. made it who I was, you know? I know it comes from my trauma. So like, I know now that like part of why I struggle with confidence was like, it's not her fault or anything, but my parents, we grew up in a violent neighborhood. So like as part of a solution to not having us get shot up and like whatever was that I was basically sent away to go live with other people. And that, I know that's part of the story. It was like, oh, my mom and dad didn't want me, you know, like,
okay.
But it's so stupid because it's not even that I knew that it wasn't true. Like growing up, I knew that wasn't true because they sent me away because they loved me. It happened at a crucial time. I was very, very young, like second grade. Mm-hmm. So I think that it happened at a time where it started the unraveling of my capacity to see my value based on who I knew I was versus based on what other people did or said. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think that's a big part of it. Like it was hard not to take all the bad things and things from the outside and just make that who I was and reinforce why I had no friends. Oh my God, I had no friends. That didn't help either. I literally had no friends. I would go to recess and play with zero people. I have memories of sitting at recess watching other kids play while I had to eat the stupid celery with the and lick, and I hated celery, so I wasn't stupid enough to just throw it away like all the other kids. Like something was seriously missing in my brain.
So yeah, this is when you were like,
it took a lot of time.
Second grader?
For it started even in kindergarten. I mean, now that you're asking me, like part of my story, so that's interesting because part of the other story is that I'm the last of children, but my mom had me like very, very late. So my next brother is like 11 years older than me.
Okay.
So I grew up like an only child with a mom who was basically so exhausted because she was an older mom that I didn't have anybody who really played with me or took care of me.
Okay.
Mostly TV and my stuffed animals. So like, yeah, I didn't grow up with normal social skills. I didn't learn how to make friends as a child. And then when I went to school, I really didn't learn how to make friends. And that was as early as kindergarten. So that story of me watching other children played while I licked celery, because mm-hmm. the nuns made me eat celery and I didn't want to eat.
Oh, you went to a Catholic school?
I did, yeah. The point is that I think that not feeling like you belong does come from like some part of your past.
Yeah.
And like healing from that and like learning to, we always talk about being brave, but learning how to be like, you know what? I don't give a crap. I had to learn where to get to where you are, but that's why it's so foreign because I didn't grow up that way. Like I had to learn how to be that way and it's still hard. Like I know that I'm still sensitive about those things, you know?
I mean, I'm sensitive about it. Like when I came to the United States, I didn't speak English. I was like six years old. I didn't speak English, but I was immediately put in school and I could speak Spanish, but I didn't know how to write in Spanish or anything. So I immediately picked up English mm-hmm. much easier than my brother, who's like 4 years older than me. Right. So there are these stories where my brother is upset that he can't understand people, you know, and he's like, I think mm-hmm. I'm stupid or whatever. And my parents are like, no. They're just speaking in a different language, which didn't occur to me, with me, you know? So, you know, it's not like I didn't have these moments where I felt not part of a group, because that I think happened to me when I was like in middle school, you know, like 12, 13, because I hadn't really been around other people that were Latinos and Latinos from all over, you know, Guatemalan, Salvadorian, other Latin Americans. I didn't know that. I just knew Bolivians. Mm-hmm. And then there were white kids, black kids. And it's in middle school where you kind of start finding those areas of division. They're like, oh, they're not like us. We're not like them. And I was like, wait, but I like all these things that other group likes, you know? And that pushed me to kind of start helping me figure out, like, who are you? Mm. Who are you outside of what people are telling you you're supposed to be? Who are you? And that's where I found people that I felt I really connected to.
Yeah. So the process of, and I agree that the process of feeling like you belong is the process of identifying who you are.
Yeah.
and finding people like you, or accepting that you're cool and you do belong somewhere. You just have to find your tribe. So you were born with the ability where when something bad happened, when somebody like dissed you or like bullied you, you were able to be like, screw them. That's not me. I'm not going to eat that. You know, like I think, and that is a skill. We have to learn not to like take on the negativity, and like, because it takes time to find your tribe.
Yeah. It doesn't only take time. It takes this idea of resilience, right? Finding enough worth in yourself.
Yeah.
To be like, it's okay. It's okay for me to just be with me because I am enough.
Yeah.
The thinking that I have now is, you know, it's years of working and trying to understand why it is that I am the way I am and what people have said to me. You, of course, internalize that. You bring in all these thoughts that people share with you. At some point in my mind, something happens where I kind of draw the line and I'm like, F it. Whatever they said doesn't even matter, man, because that's me.
We got to talk about that, though. Like, how do you deal with somebody not liking you?
I don't care.
First of all, have you ever met somebody who didn't like you?
Oh, plenty of people, man. Plenty of people don't like me. Whenever I meet people, there's always this thing of either they really, like, we really, like, hone in on one another and we, like, can completely understand one another, or they're just like, nah, I don't want anything to do with her.
You come off tough.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. And so for me, it's been this struggle of trying to figure out, you know, because you...
How did you get there?
You know, I think it has to do a lot with protective factors.
Okay.
Now that I understand myself a little better.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm short. I've always been short. Mm. So for people that don't know, I'm super short. Like, I'm 4'11". I have no issue telling people that. But when you're growing up and you're short among your peers, maybe people didn't always listen to me. So I was just like, forget it. I'm going to have to be louder so you can pay attention. I had to do that. So that becomes one area in which I excel.
You took the adversity and you did something to try and change the situation. And then trying to change the situation made you stronger. Like it worked. What do they call that? Like growth mindset or something in the education?
Yeah.
So it was experience. Like, and I think that's right. So a lot of people are like fear of rejection or whatever. So you got to go get rejected. So you realize like, that's not such a big deal. Like, yeah, I can get rejected. I can get made fun of, and it doesn't, but it has to get coupled with success. So like, you have to look at your life and say, at what point did I try to do something and see that it worked so that I can keep going? That happened for you. Like, you were able to see that what you were trying to do actually made you a stronger person.
I think one of the things that happens, though, too, and it happened to me, is when you talk about connecting with somebody. I have a couple of best friends in my life. You know, I know one since I was like in elementary school. We weren't really like friends until we were like in high school.
Yeah.
She has accepted me for who I am, like with the quirkiness and, you know, how if I can come off as tough or whatever. And so have my other friends, right? They're just like, that's just you.
Yeah.
We know that now. But that idea of being able to be myself completely in front of these people and not feel judged, I think is what people at the end of the day want, right?
Really need.
Yeah.
And there is a conception, there's this perception that you need like tons of friends, and you don't. You just need one. That's right. Like, even though I felt alone, there was a point I remember in the second or third grade where I finally made one friend, and that helped. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was the sign that I wasn't totally alone. For the first time, I belonged to one person, and that was building skills to feel like, okay, I can do this. But it's funny, though. I don't know how you feel today as an adult, but I still struggle with, like, if I get feelings like that remind me of not belonging, mm-hmm. or like if somebody doesn't, if I feel like I've offended somebody or don't like somebody, like I still have shadows of that, you know, like I'll sit and ruminate in my mind for hours and days about like what I did. And I know that's part of that. Like, it's like the residual effect of not feeling like I liked myself or like part of belonging to people.
So now when that happens, how do you break out of that? Like, what makes you like snap out and be like, okay.
I have to do my thought work. Mm-hmm. I have to be like, those are stupid thoughts. Stop it. Mm-hmm. Stop thinking those stupid thoughts. You know that they don't come from the right place and it's not true. Like, what's your truth? And then just like soothing my soul. Like, I have to like comfort myself. Like a baby. Like,
if you guys could only see Teresa that's right okay. now. She cracks me up. For you guys that don't know, Teresa and I can see one another when we're recording these podcasts. So she's like soothing herself, you know.
That's what I have to
but
do.
That's important. Yeah. That's a key thing. And for me, I think what may be missing for some people is understanding that it's okay for you to soothe yourself in a way that is helpful to get you to a place of back to your grounded space. Because as an adult, you can still experience these issues. I still have questions and I talk to myself all the time. And this is something I've done since I was little, where I could have complete conversations with myself. You know, it's like, America, stop it. You know, like, why are you even thinking that? And I thought that was like super weird. Mm-hmm. And I would never talk to anybody about it until I have my friends and they're like, I do it all the time.
Everybody talks to themselves out loud all the time.
So
let's be honest.
Now, what you're saying about stopping your mind and saying, no, this is a stupid thought, mm-hmm. which is a whole other podcast thing that we've done, right?
Yeah, we did that. part of it.
It's part of the process to help you not go down like this negative path.
Yeah. That's an actual behavior that I have to do to, as part of learning to love myself is like not to beat myself up with my own words, you know, because I am my own worst enemy for sure. I am my least best friend, to be honest, in my worst place. But in my best place, I am now, I also, like we said from the very beginning, like I'm learning to love myself and that's been really good. It's just, I know that it's a life journey. I know it's a skill. It is a skill. You know, you can't think of it as like who you are. I think that's the thing. This is the thing is like when you don't belong, like what we do is we make it our identity. Like I don't belong. Like I am bad. And that's a problem because we're not belonging. We're not bad. Like I have to think about it as my behaviors. Like what am I doing and what am I thinking that makes me isolated?
Yeah.
I can change behaviors, but I can't, like, if I just only saw it as like my personhood, that was a problem. That was a bad space, you know, because then I'm just a pile of poop.
So you're special. You hear me?
I can't accept that, but I will try.
I'm going to keep telling you that. When you're talking about what can you do, we most often are only thinking about the world in the way that we see it, right? Mm-hmm. It's me and whatever's happening on the outside.
Yeah.
But if we turn that for a minute and say, what's happening on the outside that's also causing me to be this way? I think that's another thing we have to always think about. Mm-hmm. Because it takes time for you to understand where all of these things have come to impact your life.
Yeah.
You're talking about years of, you know, learning, understanding, patience. Because I get pissed off with myself when things don't go the way that I want. Like, it pisses me off. Mm. And I have to like move back from that. It's like, yo, you need to calm down and figure out what's happening. So can we talk a little bit about like how we can find people to connect with? Just because I think it's important.
My first friend I made, I think we were just sitting with each other at snack time. Mm-hmm. And I literally have said, this is really funny. I literally said, will you be my friend? When she didn't automatically reject me and she said, okay, I was like, oh my God, somebody wants to be my friend. So now I use it as like a coping skill when I meet new people. And I'm like, hi, do you want to be my friend? And it's such a disarming statement for an adult to say that they're like, yes. Yes, I'll be your friend.
It's funny. I was at a conference maybe a month ago, and I was standing in a long line because we had to go to this event thing, you know, that's part of the conference. And I presented at the conference, and a guy that was in line in front of me, and I'm by myself. I don't have any of my work colleagues or anything there, you know, so it's just me being me. And he said, oh, you were a presenter. I was like, yeah. And he's like, I wanted to go to your session, but I wasn't able to. I was like, oh, no worries. You know, you'll have like the PowerPoint or whatever. And he's like, you know what my mom has always said? I was like, no. He's like, my mom always said, find a friend on the bus and then you'll have a friend forever, right? So he's like, do you want to be my friend? I was like, yeah, let's be friends. And, you know, we hung out for the whole night.
Yeah.
And what you're saying is true. Most of us as adults don't think, you know, when you're standing in a room with people, it's like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do now? I'm supposed to go talk to somebody? What do you mean? You know?
Yeah.
And if you go up to somebody and just be like, hi, I'm whoever.
Yeah. So I do spy a room. And like, this is probably something I used even when I was young, was you scope out a space and you're like, who's a safe person to be like, hi, I'm a friend, because you don't want to go up to somebody who isn't approachable. And then they're like, no, because I've had that happen where they're like, they laughed at my face. They're like, damn, that really hurt. You
cracked me up.
That really hurt. Or they name call you. That sucks even worse. You're like, oh, so because then you have to like deal with that, you know, and like, and that's part of like accepting rejection or whatever. But I went to find like the loneliest, most weird person that I could find that seemed like me. And that, so being brave enough to be like, oh, you're my friend, and finding the right person who seemed safe. And then when I had somebody laugh at my face, healing from that experience
and continuing
and moving on.
Yeah. Move on.
Moving on. Can we just say that being in middle school is such a cruel period of life?
Yeah, it is. It's like the worst
if
thing.
You were in middle school, there was no time in my life that was the worst. And at that time, I thought that there was nothing that could make it better. And I probably struggled with thoughts of self-harm and suicide the most when I was in middle school. And like, it just gets better.
It does like, get better.
Your emotions get better.
When you're in that age, you're just like, nobody understands
me. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I thought that too.
It sucks, but it gets better. Oh. It can get better.
Yeah.
But
right.
Going back to what you were saying, right? Finding a safe person in whatever that may be for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then if you're trying to find a space where you feel like there is some safety, I think you can also think about the things that you may like to do. And unwittingly, you may find people that you can connect with. Mm-hmm. It just helps. It functions as a bridge, right?
Yeah.
Of me being able to be like, oh, you like comics, you know, or anime, whatever.
Finding common likes helps. Yeah.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's okay to ask other people to help you make that connection. Because I have found that that's also important. Where you may have that fear of rejection, right? And you're just like, am I going to talk to that person? They're going to think I'm a complete weirdo. But maybe you have somebody that's on your side to be like, can you help me here? And then maybe they're like, oh, well, you know, Teresa likes Cheetos. She likes hot Cheetos. Don't you? Boom. You know?
Yeah.
You're right, though. It speaks to all these issues that happen when we're like growing up and trying to figure out like, what the hell am I supposed to be doing with myself right now?
Yeah.
How am I supposed to get people to like me when I feel like nobody understands me, but I'm a super weirdo?
Yeah. I mean, that's what we started today.
Yeah.
And it's already opened up a bunch of questions like, how do I be a good friend? And how do I
know I have worth?
How do I have worth? Well, one problem at a time.
One problem at a time. Hopefully this helped you guys in some way. It always helps us to talk about the stuff that we've dealt with. So Teresa's going to go back to self-soothing.
Petting my head.
Feel better. But we are all special in our own very special way.
Keep on fighting. Bye.